It seems like just yesterday that the Rogue Valley singer Leslie Kendall last visited our studio to share her unique vocal styling. Even if you've never seen her, you might have seen the name, either fronting Leslie Kendall on the Jump Daddies or joined by guitarist Ed Dunsavage. Those were not the first gigs for Leslie Kendall. Her career stretches back about half a century, and she's calling it a career. Now, before we hear the speaking voice, let's hear a clip from that last visit 2 years ago with Ed Dunsavage. This is Leslie Kendall making a face while she sings Moonglow.
It must have been moonglow way up in the blue. It must have been moonglow that led me straight to you. I still hear you say, dear one, hold me fast, and I start out praying, oh Lord, please make this last.
And I was actually making a time cue. I remember the moment well because I was, you know, doing the whole, like, we're done here, and you finished right as the time for the segment ran out. That was in December of 2014 with Ed Dunsavage. Leslie Kendall is here in the studio once again. So good to see you.
It's great to see you, Jeff.
So I guess I should explain. I first met you actually working in a show together. We worked on Broadway Holiday for Ashland Community Theater, was it?
Yeah, Herman Adele.
Yeah, back in 1996, was it? A bunch of
I think it was.
A bunch of different pieces of music. And that was the first time I'd ever run across you. And I went, wow, who's the Barbara Streisand sounded like? But it's more than that. It's much more than that. You've been singing actually for half a century plus,
yeah.
I guess. Huh?
Yeah, 46 years.
So define retire. I mean, you're walking away from singing completely or what?
It's a loose definition. It's because I really decided that I wanted to leave with you know, a feeling of I could still do this really the way that I have done it. And my dad walked away from his career, and I watched him do it, and he did it with a lot of dignity. He was also a professional singer, and he had a radio career for 25 years. So I wanted to do it in my timing instead of drag it out and then just wish I had retired a few years earlier. I still have singing in me, mm-hmm. but I just feel like it's time to not do the public venues.
Mm-hmm. So this raises the question, because you're teaching singing as
I
well.
I love
Will
teaching.
Will that continue?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I have a studio in Ashland. I teach kids. I think my youngest is right now is 10, and my oldest is, my oldest has been in the past, 89. Oldest student.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Peg Edwards.
That
it was
fun.
Great.
So you mentioned you've got music in your blood. Your dad was tell us about what he did.
Well, he met my mother during the war, and after the war they moved to Seattle. He got a singing job there, and then they moved to Detroit, Michigan. My mother was from Plymouth, Northville area. And they moved to Michigan, and he got a job at JPR, this is where I am right now. He got a job at WJR, the Golden Tower of the Fisher Building in Detroit, and is a 50,000-watt station, so he got a lot of coverage in the Midwest. Nobody died or got married without my dad singing.
What was his name?
Fred Kendall.
All right. So actually, we have a clip of him. You provided a lot of stuff, not just from your career, but from his as well. So Fred Kendall is singing You're Too Dangerous.
Cherie.
You're too dangerous, Cherie, too dangerous for me. I know I can't resist you. You're too beautiful, Cherie. What will become of me? Will I regret I kissed you?
So Fred Kendall singing You're Too Dangerous, Cherie, obviously a tenor. You had mentioned when you came in you're a tenor yourself now.
Yeah. That was one of the reasons I thought, where is this going to end? Poor Ed Dunsavage. He has rewritten my charts probably 30 times. We started in the mezzo-soprano range, and then we went to the alto range, and now we're in the tenor range. And, you know, you lose the high notes, but you gain the low notes, so it becomes this very throaty, fabulous, smoky quality, but you lose the high notes. So I don't sing the Barbra Streisand stuff anymore, you know, but it all works out. It's all fair. Jazz is forgiving.
It is indeed. Leslie Kendall's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about her stepping away from performing after a very long career. And your father's career obviously was a spark for yours. Were your parents agnostic about whether you did or did not go into music? I'm curious to know whether there was any pressure to do it or to not do it.
Well, they held their breath. They really did. They sent me to college. It wasn't something I wanted to do. All I wanted to do was sing. I sang on his show when I was 10. And I was completely hooked. It just was. I think I sang "I Enjoy Being a Girl," and I think my dad he hired an arranger to do that song, because I think I was such a tomboy. He wanted to see me with a pound and a half of makeup on my face. You remember that line from "I Enjoy Being a Girl"? I'm strictly a female's female. So anyway, my dad was a great guy, and my mom was a nervous soprano. You know, she gave up her career as a singer when my dad decided he was going to make his living as a singer. We never got to hear her sing, never, not a note.
Really?
And she was
even at home around the piano?
Nothing. Hmm. And because she didn't want to overshadow my dad. So when I came along and decided to be a singer, they were thrilled, but very nervous, and they should be. You know, it's a very rough career.
Indeed. But you managed to stick with it through some ups and downs over the years.
Yeah.
What did you go to college for?
I thought I was going to be a sociologist, of all things, or a psychologist, which plays into my strengths today. I run a domestic violence program in Medford, which is it's my full-time day job. Yeah, I have that part of me, but the passion to sing was just, it overpowered everything else.
So you actually have cut some records as a solo artist, and how did you first get set up doing that? I mean, we'll get to your first song in a second that Paul Anka wrote, but how did you get set up as a solo artist?
Paul Anka wrote "This Is Your Song," and he was. He was represented by the Dick and Ted Glasser brothers. They were very famous producers in the 70s. And Ted came in to hear me sing at the Marriott Hotel in Los Angeles. And I was with a very famous pianist at the time, Alan Broadbent. And we never sounded better. And Ted Glasser just loved what he heard and asked if I would sing "This Is Your Song." And it became 28 nationally.
It reached 28 on the Billboard Hot 100. Okay,
yeah.
You're right. I teased the song incorrectly because I didn't have "This Is Your Song." I wanted to showcase your voice a little more.
Okay,
and I thought that 100 years actually points this up a little better.
Oh,
the other day I felt so young, but now you made me 100 years. If you turn round, look what you've done. You'll see my eyes, you'll see my tears.
So I have to ask, Leslie Kendall, was this around the time of One Tin Soldier? There's a certain...
Yes.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, and it was a big hit in Germany and Bozeman, Montana.
What? Why Bozeman, Montana?
I have no idea. The kids on the campus there just loved it. And, you know, it was the 70s. Pop was just a wild ride. You had to bring it in under 3 minutes or right at 3 minutes. You had to have a hook, lots of reverb, and, you know, there choirs were big. I mean, everything was just this fat, big pop sound.
Sort of like the wall of sound, in a sense.
Yeah.
Maybe a little less than what Phil Spector put up there, because he seemed to throw everything and the kitchen sink into his sessions. But,
mm-hmm.
But a big sound for sure in pop music. What was the grinder like, though? I mean, you know, so here you are essentially getting told, okay, here's your song. You know, you're going to do this. Was that the way it worked back then in the days of the strong record companies?
Yeah, because the singer-songwriters were the commodities. They really got to call the shots. I was not a songwriter, so I was just constantly looking for material. And at this time, I was with MCA. But then I think when I got to 100 years, it was I think that was Columbia.
All right, so definitely working with a couple of different record labels, but you
yeah.
ended up falling in at some point with the Percy Faith Orchestra. Tell
yes,
us about that.
Yes, that was just a magnificent experience, Jeff. I met with Percy at his house, and he chose the key I was going to sing the song in, and then he arranged it. And his daughter, after he passed away, his daughter sent me the arrangements, and I have them in my studio. There back then, everything was handwritten, so they're archival to me. They're just so beautiful. And he chose two songs for me, Maybe September and The Saddest Thing of All. They're both available on Google for free. And you just put in Leslie Kendall, Maybe September, and you can hear the whole thing.
Okay, before we hear the song, though, I want to get to where we explain the significance of Percy Faith, because it's a generational thing. When I mentioned to my wife that you'd work with Percy Faith, she was like, really, Percy Faith? And I could just see blank eyes in people younger than our generation who don't really understand the
True.
Significance of Percy
right.
Faith.
Well, I mean, he was just a phenomenal orchestrator. He had a gift for sneaking in a modulation. You could barely perceive it, but he lifted you with his music. It always felt like just around the corner there was a smile waiting for you. You know, that's how his music struck me. And he was a very kind man and a superstar in his time.
So let's actually hear Leslie singing Maybe September with Percy Faith's Orchestra.
Maybe September I'll love again. Maybe a rainbow will catch me then.
I see what you mean about the modulations of Percy Faith. There was a subtle downslide in there
mm-hmm.
that just kind of made the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So this was kind of like a culmination of a dream for you and your parents, I understand,
yeah.
when you took Maybe September home for them to hear.
Yeah, I carried my little packet of albums. Columbia gave me like 20 albums to give away. And I carried that home from Los Angeles to outside of Ann Arbor, Michigan, where I grew up. And I had a massive sound system. I actually had a crate that was American Airlines would fly all my stuff around. I had a crate the size of a pod. You know those pods you see on the street when people are moving?
Yeah, the big white ones.
Yeah, and they would slide that into the aircraft. I had my whole world with me on the road. I was on the road for 10 years. I had recording equipment and pianos and sound systems and this massive sound system that just blew your hair back when you listened to music through it. And I turned that thing on and my parents were transfixed. They just looked like every unrealized dream they had ever had was being met right in that moment when they were listening to me sing with a 60-piece orchestra. And it was a thrilling moment. We all cried after I sang it.
Leslie Kendall's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a longtime resident of the Rogue Valley and a singer for a lot longer than that. We're talking about half a century worth of career here, and Leslie is stepping away from performing, which is why she's here visiting us on the Jefferson Exchange. So a bit of a trip down memory lane for us here. Percy Faith said you have elephant ears, which I understand is a compliment.
Yeah, it's a compliment. It just means that you really listened in between the notes. You hear You hear everything. And I walked in, I had on these huge Elton John yellow
the platform shoes.
Yeah, they were clogs, actually. And they were bright yellow made out of fiberglass. And I walked into that recording studio. It was like 1974 or five. And there were 60 musicians sitting there. And back then, people dressed, you know, for everything. You dressed up to go on an airplane. You dressed up to go to the studio. You know, and I came in with these ridiculous shoes on. And they made me 4 inches taller than I used to be, which was 5'7". Uh-huh. No longer, but used to be. And I stood up to the microphone. And Percy said, you know, he said, okay, we're ready whenever you are. And no rehearsal. We just started recording. And that was our take. That maybe September was one take.
Really?
Yeah. And the saddest thing of all had one little adjustment that we made after the orchestra went home. But when they tapped their batons, you know, on their music stands, not their batons, but their, you know, their the violins mm-hmm. and
the bows, yeah.
The
yeah.
bows, thanks. And he taps his baton on the music stand, and that was their way of applauding. And it was just a fabulous moment for me.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
But so give us a sense, though, of the differences in styles and genres, because you're talking about the pop machine on one hand and this sort of older standards with much bigger ensembles that Percy Faith did. I mean, you're able to sing, obviously, anything, but do you have a favorite genre?
Oh, it's jazz now. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I working with Ed Dunsavage was one of the highlights of my career. Not only did he accommodate my ever-falling voice into the basement of JPR, he was just kind and generous of spirit and a fabulous communicator. He kept the email list back when that mattered, and he built an audience and a following, and then he created the venue where most of the traveling performers on the I-5 corridor, you know, come through Ashland, and they're engaged in activities that he promotes.
He's a jazz true believer, no question.
Fabulous, yeah. So I've done all types of music. I've sung country and western. They tried to promote me as a country western singer at Columbia for a while. They thought, well, maybe that's her niche.
Really?
Yeah, and I was willing. I thought for a minute I was going to sing gospel. They just threw me into every possible genre to try to find an avenue for me. But I had kids, moved out of L.A., and just, you know, moved on to the jazz that I have sung for the last 25 years.
Have you seen the movie 50 Feet from Stardom?
No.
Okay. I was going to ask, I mean, you're never a backup singer, but I just wonder if there was a sense that you were just you know, a half a block away from the full superstar dream or something, or if that's ever what you truly wanted.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think that I am a person who has a need for fame. Since I had kids, I think it's been that long. I was driven in my 20s, just driven to be famous. But there's something changed in me when I hit 30. I just thought, no, there's more here, and I've got to find it. Mm-hmm. So I moved in another direction.
We've heard the sultry stuff. I want to make sure that people get to hear a more playful side of Leslie Kendall. So here's Mambo Italiano.
Italiano, hey mambo, mambo Italiano, go, 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 you mixed up Siciliano, are you calabrese, do the mambo like a crazy one, hey mambo.
When was this?
That was in like 2002, I think.
Uh-huh.
It was with the Jump Daddies.
Uh-huh.
And David McKenzie, he was another great local guy. His aspirations took him back into the symphonic world. He was the conductor of the New Bedford Symphony Orchestra after he finished and left the Valley. But he was the interim conductor of the Rogue Valley Symphony, and he actually took me back to New Bedford to sing with his symphony two summers in a row. fabulous to sing with the strings again mm-hmm. after all those years.
So you were talking about how things just changed for you when you hit 30, when you had kids. Is that why you moved to the Ashland area from, you were in LA at that time, right?
I got clean and sober, honestly, at 33. And that's really when things changed for me, because the music business was, you know, fast and loose and back in those days. And I, you know, frankly, I think we're seeing the things that are happening to these old rock stars now. You know, we played hard mm-hmm. and I think it takes a toll. So I'm kind of glad I got out when I did.
So you're going to continue to teach. I mean, it sounds like you get something from your students as well as what they get from you.
Yeah, I love working with students, and I encourage them to record themselves, you know, to see what you sound like, because you don't know what you sound like until you hear a recording back, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you have this magnificent radio voice, but you're used to it now. But when you first heard yourself, it's very different than what we think we sound like.
Isn't
right?
that weird when you're a kid? It's like, wait a minute, I thought I sounded like this, and I sounded like this.
Right? Yeah, that and singing lessons, I think, really. I didn't have any singing lessons as a kid. I hadn't had a singing lesson when I sang for Percy Faith.
Mm-hmm. Really?
I was 25 when I started really taking voice lessons in Los Angeles, and it helped. It helped me understand so much more about the craft. But what has helped me the most is teaching for the last 22 years. Mm-hmm. That's been an amazing journey, learning the craft of singing.
We're going to have the Lord's Prayer play to take us out. Tell us the significance of this recording for you.
Oh, my father. He sang it in the 40s. He recorded it, and so I recorded it for him.
All right, Leslie Kendall, thanks so much for joining us. Sorry to hear you leaving the stage, but good to know you're still going to be teaching a new generation of singers.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thine is the